Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Life After Love Gone Wrong. Today, I have a very special guest with me, a partner and a friend in our Fox Rothschild office of Melissa Terranova. As I'm a family law attorney with Fox Rothschild, I practice primarily out of the Morristown, New Jersey office. However, my practice covers the entire state. And I happen to work often and closely with our guest today, Melissa, who is a partner in the Trust and Estate Tax and Wealth Planning Department. I think I said that right. Thank you for being here today, Melissa. I'm happy to have you.
Thank you for having me.
I would love it if you could share a little bit about your background and what you do with us.
Sure. So I grew up in Michigan. I've been transplanted to New Jersey. I've been here since 2004. I have been practicing law since 2005. And since the start of my practice, I've been exclusively practicing in the trust and estates area. I started at a couple of smaller firms. And before I joined Fox in 2016, I was with a boutique firm in the Red Bank area. As Sandra said, I'm in the Princeton office, but I have clients throughout the entire state. I frequently meet with clients in our Morristown office and the Atlantic City office. I work with these families. We do estate planning, estate administration. I have families where I represent parents and children. We have generations that we do estate planning for.
That's great. And it's super important. I think that I can at least speak for myself to say it's not an easy task to think about what would happen when you're dead. Frankly, nobody's generally looking forward to that day. And those are hard conversations to have. And in the personal family dynamic can make them even more difficult. While it seems like what would we have in common, and Melissa and I often share stories of similar nature with some of our clients and the stress that this process can have for them. And that's why I do work closely with Melissa, because she gets it and she understands it. So today we're going to talk about the relevance and the importance, really, of addressing your estate plan when you're divorcing or thinking of a divorce or you've just completed your divorce. I work with clients, obviously, in the divorce world, and I try earlier rather than later to have them consider this planning, whether they have a plan and they need to change that, or they don't have one and they need to get one. And a lot of times people say, well, I don't have anything. Why would I need to do a will? I don't want to spend that kind of money. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't have a plan in place. I think that it's often difficult when a divorce is over for a lot of clients who have just been exhausted by the whole process to have to start a new process, which is why I have them thinking about that earlier on. But in any event, Melissa, can you tell our listeners or our viewers today some of the reasons why and what it means when we talk about the word estate plan? Because that's really a general term, like an umbrella term, and there's obviously different pieces of that. So can you explain some of that with your expertise?
Sure. Estate planning, it covers a variety of documents. It covers your will. That's the thing that most people are familiar with, that term. People talk about their will. So it covers their will. And the will is the document that discusses how your assets are going to pass when you pass away. The other documents that are very important that a lot of people don't pay much attention to, and I think it's important documents, especially while you're in the process of getting a divorce, is a power of attorney and a healthcare directive. Those two documents are very important, and I can't stress the importance of them. The power of attorney is the document that appoints someone to make financial decisions for you during your lifetime. It's when you're unable to make those decisions yourself. The healthcare directive, like a power of attorney, it comes into play during your lifetime, but you're unable to make decisions. The healthcare directive appoints someone to make those decisions for you. During a divorce, it's a good idea to get those two documents specifically updated. And I always stress those two documents, because if you don't have those documents and you are in the process of getting a divorce and something happens, your spouse has the first right to make those decisions. Those are the ones that I think are really important while you're getting a divorce.
Let me interrupt you real quick, because I think, sorry about that. I think people don't realize that. They think because they've filed for divorce that's not the case, but under the law, you are technically still married, even though you filed for divorce. And so you have to take affirmative steps to change the ability of your soon-to-be ex to make those decisions. So if you're incapacitated or deemed incapacitated for some reason, and you don't have a power of attorney, your soon-to-be ex or your ex can go ahead and access your financials, your bank accounts, and your life insurance, and your house mortgage information, and change things and such. Same thing with the healthcare directive, right? It allows them to be able to make the decisions about what medical care you may or may not need or should get, as opposed to somebody else. And generally, in my experience, people don't really want their ex being able to do that while they're getting divorced. It's generally not a comfort level. There's a lot of mistrust, all of the above, anything you can think of. If we don't have these documents, just understand that de facto, under the law, it will go to your spouse to be able to do that. And my understanding, Melissa, is that these are fairly easy, straightforward documents to get
very
prepared.
Easy.
It's not
yes.
a heavy lift, right?
Yeah, that's
Sorry,
correct.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, that's fine. And with that is sometimes people may not be through their divorce yet, so their spouse may have the right. But if something happens, if someone gets into an accident and there's, you know, issues there, there could be a big fight between the spouse who they were in the process of getting divorced and the family members. So these documents are important because it would help to alleviate a lot of the potential litigation down the road in case something does happen. And like you said, they're easy documents to do. A lot of times, Sandra, when I meet with your clients when they're in the process of getting a divorce, those are the first two documents that we do. We do those right off the bat. And then we'll go into more discussions with their will and review any other trust or whatever that they may have. So with the estate planning, like I said, it is your will, it's your power of attorney, it's your healthcare directive. If there was a trust created during your lifetime, those during your marriage, those are things that you want to look at. But some of the bigger things that people often overlook is your beneficiary designations on your assets and how your assets are held. I know a lot of the assets, the titling of the assets is cleaned up in the process of the divorce, but sometimes there are these outlying accounts or assets that are sitting out there that maybe they were supposed to be divided in a certain way, but they weren't. It's part of it. So the estate planning isn't just these specific documents. It's also looking at all of the assets, all of the accounts, how things are titled, and the beneficiary designations on all of the assets.
It's like a cleanup almost.
Absolutely.
Making sure that your house is tidy in, in these areas once the divorce is final.
Yeah. And like you said at the beginning, these are discussions that people, they just don't like to have. They don't like to talk about their eventual demise. They don't, it's not a comfortable thing. But I can say when the process is done, every client, whether they just went through a divorce or they're just coming to me because they want their estate planning done, they have minor children and they're concerned. Once it's done, everyone has the sense of relief. Okay, I did that. I can check that off my list. I feel better now. It is something that, yes, it's a difficult conversation, but once you're through it, you feel so much better. I'm an estate planning attorney and my child was like 8 years old, maybe, by the time I got my planning done. And I can say that once it was done, it is a huge relief.
Yeah, there are difficult decisions to be made, especially if you have young kids. If you pass, who should get them and all of that? And do you need a trust set up for certain things? But I absolutely agree with you from a personal perspective. Once it was done, it was like a total weight lifted off my shoulders and just checked it off, right? And you don't have to worry about that, the what if. So by ignoring it doesn't necessarily make the problem go away, or it certainly doesn't make it get any better. It is a good time to do a check of your plan if you already have one, or to at least get some sort of plan in place during the process or immediately thereafter. Okay, we talked about power of attorney, healthcare directive. What about a will?
Right. So when clients come in while they're in the process of a divorce or after the divorce, usually, one of the first things I do is I ask for their marital separation agreement, because we need to see if there's any obligations in there for them to provide for the ex-spouse. So that's one of the first things we look at before we get into the will. And then when we talk about the will, a lot of times clients do have wills in place. They did prepare wills with their ex-spouse, so they need them updated. The wills have to be updated to remove the ex-spouse. You have to look at them for fiduciary appointments. Fiduciary appointments means an executor or a trustee. A lot of times when you're in a marriage, you may appoint an in-law as an executor or a trustee or a guardian for your minor children, and you don't want that person. They are removed from your life now, but you want to update those and make sure you're looking at who those appointments are. Many times clients will come in with wills that were created during their marriage, and they will usually provide for the spouse. And then there's usually some language in there for the children. If there's minor children, we want to make sure that those trust provisions are looked at. You want to think about a trust for your children. If you have children that are in their 20s, a lot of clients still want trust for their children. Those are all provisions that we look at and we talk about, and we think about the children, where they are at that point, their maturity level, their age, how they are with finances. And you make the decisions. You walk through that and you make those decisions and decide what to put in your document. But the will is one of those documents that you have to sit down, you have to talk about, you have to think about various situations. And it's a personal thing, really. It is. Those discussions that we have with clients are personal. You learn a lot about their family, a lot about their circumstances, a lot about their children. And it's just a matter of talking it through and figuring out what works best for that particular client. Guardianship provisions are a big deal. So when you get divorced, like I said, a lot of times you may have in-laws in there as a guardian. And those are things that one of the main things that I think most clients want updated. They don't want in-laws in their documents as a guardian or a trustee or an executor.
Yeah, understandably that makes sense. So you said in the beginning that the first thing you do is look at their divorce agreement to see what their financial obligations may be to their former spouse. Why do you do that? Can you just talk a bit more about why that would be important for you?
Yeah, so it depends on what is in the MSA. Sometimes there is a financial obligation that they must have life insurance maybe for the ex-spouse.
To cover that.
Or if they don't, they need to have a bequest in their will in lieu of the life insurance. We have to look at that to see if there's any obligations. And that leads me to the next thing of life insurance. So you have to look at that obligation if they have the life insurance. And a lot of times what I see more and more now, it comes up very often, is during the marriage, and it usually happened in around 2012 when everyone was doing a lot of estate planning because the estate tax law was changing, a lot of people set up life insurance trusts. And those life insurance trusts hold big policies. And those policies, the policies are payable to the trust. And a lot of times those trusts provide provisions for the ex-spouse, or it has the ex-spouse as the trustee, or it has your former in-laws as trustees, or even potential beneficiaries under those documents. That is another thing that we look at the same time that we do that will, because we want to make sure that those trusts are, if we can update it, we update it. There's other things, other planning that we can do with that. Because a lot of times that particular life insurance policy doesn't have to go to the ex-spouse. The MSA may say you need to have a $100,000 policy for the ex-spouse, but your life insurance trust could have a lot more than that. A lot of that is looking at that and making sure that is structured and doing some adjustments, if possible, to fix those issues as well.
And some of that even can be from a savings plan, a tax savings plan too, because my understanding is when you have a trust that holds money and the money becomes, let's say, liquid, the trust then has a tax obligation to the taxing authorities. And so is there making sure that you understand that and that you can prepare for that in the best financial way that makes sense for you and your family? Just as another caveat, when you mentioned before about wills, my parents had a will done when we were all infants. And I made them, right after law school, actually update their will because a lot of it just didn't even make sense. Mm-hmm. So maybe you're watching today and you're not in a divorce or anything like that, you're just thinking about your estate plan, keep that in mind too, that because you have a will, if that will was created in 1985, it still may make sense for you and your family to just have somebody like look at it and update it. The tax code has changed, state laws have changed. It doesn't hurt to have somebody just review it and make sure that mm-hmm. you're still planning in the best way for your family.
I always recommend, I always recommend looking at your will, just taking a look at it, glancing at it every 5 years. And mm-hmm. you should really talk to an attorney if there's a change in circumstance. A change in circumstance means that if you had minor children, maybe they're no longer minors. If your children, a lot of times, get married, parents want to revisit their wills at that time. They want to make sure that the assets are protected in case of a child's eventual divorce. If your assets appreciate, something happens, you sell a business, things like that, it's always a good idea to go talk to your attorney, review your documents, take a look at it. And like you pointed out, the tax law has changed drastically in the last few years. And right. as of right now, it's set to change again as of January 1st, 2026. A lot of clients right now are coming in, looking at their estate planning and wanting to know whether they need to do something now, if there's some changes that should be made, if they need to think about some tax savings, things that they could do. That's a common conversation that we're having now. Like I said, I always recommend every 5 years or so, just taking a look at it. And especially if there's a change of circumstance, reaching out to your attorney just to take a look and see if there's anything that should be updated.
Just makes sense for sure. Mm-hmm. And so one of the other areas, because we've been talking about some of these trusts and you specifically mentioned life insurance trusts, but there are situations, there are families, many families who have children. Some of those children may be special needs. And so we hear of the term special needs trust. And when I have a situation where there's a family that is separating, uncoupling, and they have a special needs child, I often bring Melissa in to have a conversation about, is it appropriate to have a trust set up for the special needs child? Even if you don't have a special needs child or children, is a trust appropriate? Because when there is money being moved, it may make sense to create a safety by way of a trust holding funds for children's future expenses, whether that be private education or college or even things as a wedding or unanticipated medical costs, or if everybody's on board with helping a child with a first home and they have the ability financially to do that at the time of their separation, divorce, it may make sense to put those things into place, takes money out of their own estate for tax purposes. And it creates a safety net where some of these trusts, you can decide who will be the trustee of the trust, the person who gets to make decisions and have maybe one person from each side of the relationship that everybody can trust to work with the family, right? So what else is there about those trusts that are important to think about?
Yeah, the special needs trust is very important. And I find that even divorcing spouses want to take care of their children no matter what, especially if there's a special needs child. And a lot of times in those discussions, there may be money that they want to put into a trust during their lifetime. So there's a difference in a trust that is created at your death versus a trust that you create during your lifetime. So a lot of these parents want to create a trust during their lifetime and put money into it for a special needs child. And like I said, usually spouses, ex-spouses, that is one thing that they tend to agree on. And if there are going to be lifetime distributions, a lot of times we do create these special needs trusts. And it is a, I call it a bucket. It is a bucket where both spouses can contribute money into for that specific child. And sometimes, like you said, there could be one spouse as a trustee and maybe one of the in-laws as a co-trustee. So they work together so that they know that there is this bucket there for that child, that specific child, that the money can be there for that child if that child needs it. That is something that we do. A lot of times when parents have special needs children, they don't do the lifetime trust for that child, but they will create these trusts in their will. And That's one of those discussions that we always have. It's one of the questions that I ask. Tell me about your children. Okay. Do you have any children with any disabilities? Do you have children with spendthrift issues? Can they not manage money? Those are the questions that we ask all the time. And then we decide whether they want to do a lifetime trust or if they want to create these trusts under their will. Parents usually, even if they don't have a special needs child, if their children are good, they're thriving, a lot of times parents want the children's assets to be put in a trust at the parent's death. The parent dies and a child is in their 20s, let's say. Parents don't want their children in their 20s to get the money outright. They have concerns.
Yeah, I'm one of those.
Exactly. They have concerns right. over them getting a large sum of money in their 20s. So a lot of times parents will create these trusts for their children, and they're not to punish the children. They're to protect the children. Right. You put the money in trust. The children will get the money over a term of years. But at any point during the tenure of the trustee would have the ability to dip into the trust to pay for the child's health, education, maintenance, and support, to help them buy a house, to help them start a business. Those are things that the trustee can dip into the trust for to help that child. But it's not there to allow the child to go and quit school and travel the world. It's there. And the parents want to protect that money for when that they feel that the child will be more responsible.
Sometimes even, divorcing families, again, with just none of the issues that would, pause for future planning, but just the fact that somebody may remarry and have other children, and there's a concern that the children from this relationship or the child would not be treated fairly, right? So it takes even that off the table. You don't have to have that conversation or have that argument, which is generally what it is, if you're able to do that. The other thing that these trusts do, which is sometimes, and I think largely unintentional, is that it creates a protection for your child in the event that they get married and face a divorce themselves. Yeah. So a lot of people do not love the word prenuptial agreement for a variety of reasons, but having this in place at least can protect what the family has created and gives to their child, so that if they get married and that marriage does not work, there's protection for some of these assets that are being held by the trust. So that's just like the coincidental benefit that people aren't always necessarily doing this for that reason, but sometimes they are also.
Yeah, absolutely. I always say that trusts are created to protect the child from predators, creditors, and taxes. So creditors are people who take advantage. If you have someone in their early 20s who's inheriting a lot of money, they don't have the maturity to maybe manage it, and there's people who could take advantage. Creditors could be an ex-spouse. If you're in a profession where there's a lot of liability, like a doctor, for example, a trust can protect against potential creditors. And of course, taxes. There's always a tax planning that you can do when you set up these trusts. But one thing I did want to go back to was we talked about beneficiary designations. And how it's so important to review your beneficiary designations when you're getting a divorce. But after you have your will created, and if the will is creating trust for your children, you want to go back and revisit those beneficiary designations again, because a lot of times, most of us, a bulk of our assets is in our retirement funds and life insurance. Mm-hmm. And we usually have our spouse as our primary beneficiary. And if we don't have a spouse, then we usually put our children, not thinking right. that those children are minors and just not thinking about how these assets pass. Many people right. think that if they do a will and they create these trusts for their children, that's it. My children are protected. That's not the case, because your life insurance, your retirement funds, those pass by beneficiary designations. Those don't go according to the terms of your will. After right. your will is done, you have to go back and revisit those beneficiary designations, and you have to change those to make the trust under the will as the beneficiary. So that way your children aren't receiving the bulk of your estate outright. it's going into the trust that you created under the will. And that's one of those most important things. And it's one of the things that is often overlooked because, again, parents think that once the will's done, that's it. And we're constantly reminding and doing follow-ups to make sure the beneficiary designations are up to date. So that's one of the things.
You just gave me a reminder. So thank you. Because now I'm wondering if I did that. So that's good. Yeah. That's good to think about.
Yeah. And like I said, generally, a bulk of our assets are in those type of assets, life insurance and our retirement funds.
Right. Right. We're running towards the end of our episode. So just to cap it, recap, I think major takeaways are making sure that you have, at the very least, at a minimum, a power of attorney and a healthcare directive. Divorcing, not divorcing, making sure that if you have a will that you've checked it at least in the last 5 years and that it still resonates with your wishes and kind of the changes in the law that we're talking about. And if you don't have a will, making that happen so that you can be in control of what would happen with your estate, however small or large it may be, that it goes according to your wishes upon your demise is really, I think, the four big takeaways from today.
Yes.
And then obviously there's other issues that you can further delve into with Melissa about some more of the details and intricacies of those plans, right?
That wraps it up very good.
Melissa is obviously a partner here at Fox Rothschild, like we mentioned earlier. You can find more information about her, including her top contact information. If you just go to our firm website, foxrothschild.com, put in her name, Melissa Terranova. You can even search her by her practice group, Tax and Wealth Planning, and feel free to contact her directly. Same goes for me. You can search me on our website. You can also find other resources that I have. Some of them include estate planning, things that Melissa has helped me come up with throughout the years of us working together. Thank you again for joining me today. I really appreciate it. I think this was a world of knowledge for people.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I'm hoping that it wasn't as nerve-wracking as you thought it was going to be.
Not too bad.
All right. Thanks for joining us today, everybody.